You know, I know the elders tell us that we really shouldn't be, you know, rummaging through the rubble of the old world, but it's kind of cool to see how people lived before the event, right?
Oh, indeed, indeed. It's like, you know, a little history tour.
Right? And there's the little round thing, what it called, the it used to, like, gather dust. Roomba, something like that, I think it's called.
Something like that.
And now look at it, now there's just a tree growing out the top.
Oh, look at that!
That's beautiful. It's true what they say. Nature abhors a vacuum. Greetings, strangers, queer and pleasant. I'm not Laura Kate Magnet Dale.
And I'm not Jane Eyres Magnet Dale. And welcome to another episode of Queer and Pleasant Strangers. It's a podcast for two queer trans women. That's us. We're wifey types.
Yeah.
We have a bit of a silly catch-up and we talk about the media we've consumed in the week. And
the silliest catch-up.
We just have a silly old time. Mm-hmm. How are you doing? How are you doing?
Ooh, gosh, it's nice to see the sun.
It is. It's
lovely. It was not always functional.
No, sometimes, but it was briefly here, and I appreciate that.
It make body feel better, and also my plants very very happy about that.
As well, they should be.
Yeah. So we usually start off with things we played.
Yeah.
What have you played this week?
Well, I might as well start with the one that I'm ever so slightly playing during recording today.
What?
I've jumped back into Balatro.
Ah.
Here's the thing about Balatro. We've talked about this before. It's the game that starts off kind of like poker, and then...
Pokish.
You start doing a lot of things to change the rules entirely so it no longer represents poker in the slightest.
Mm-hmm. Poker as a sort of, be, you know, issuing a statement distancing itself from Balatro.
Exactly. And I thought I was done with Balatro. I'd put my, like, couple of weeks of obsessive play into it and gone, you know, I think I got that out of my system. And then I started, like, watching some YouTube content about Balatro and, like, getting into watching some of the funky stuff people have done with that game and going, I feel like I could do more with Balatro. And I've gone right back down the rabbit hole
watching
now.
Watching people who've absolutely broken that game.
Indeed, and I'm certainly not on their level, but watching some people has given me some... I've understood some of the mechanics slightly better than I did before, and I'm experimenting with some of the decks in different ways. And now I've come back to it with a fresh excitement, and I feel like a fresh level of success in it. Mm. I feel like I'm steamrolling through achievements a bit more than I was before in a nice way. I had a very good run where I was making, like, I peaked at making 4.5 million points on a single full house.
Nice.
And, Balatro continues to be, I think it's going to be one of those games for a while, like The Binding of Isaac, where I'll put it down and be like, I think I've had my full of this. And then I'll just have a little urge and it'll steal 6 hours from me.
It's one of those games that I think is not too huge, so it's perfect for... It sits installed on my hard drive, and every now and again I'll just be like, you know what, I'm just browsing for something random to distract me for half an hour or so, that's the perfect thing to do. And as you say, immediately finding that I have, in fact, lost many hours to it.
It's real good at that. You know, it's a good, I can just do one hand in between, you know, talking on a podcast, and then suddenly I made 50k by having 4 aces in a hand.
You did?
Because I have a little Fibonacci spiral, and ace is 1, and that's part of the Fibonacci sequence.
Oh, yes.
And then I have a Cavendish banana that's tripling my score, and then if I get 4 of a kind, it triples the multiplier again. And
wow.
Yeah, I'm real down that Balatro hole. It continues to just... It'll wax and wane, but it keeps getting its hooks in me.
I've played a little bit more. I was playing it on stream last week. Twitch.tv/Janiac. Come and say hi. I was like, yeah, you know, I'll play it. And I lost a lot of games, some of them quite quickly. Partly because I'm still trying to get all the tags.
Yeah.
So that I can stop wondering whether or not I've actually got those tags. So when you're selecting an ante or picking basically the next difficulty, or even accessing, rather, the next difficulty section, there is an option to skip the small blind and the big blind before, but not the boss blind. And if you do so, there is a chance to get some kind of bonus. And there is basically a collection thing of X, of Y, how many you've got, and I'm trying to get all of the tags done. But yeah, it's I've been enjoying it. I ended up overrunning the stream by like half an hour. Usually finish at 10 p.m. Ended up staying until 5:30 because I ended up winning a run.
Yay!
Which was good. My second ever completion, and I did it on the stream, which was fun. Was it nice to have everyone be like, "Yay, we did it together as a group"?
Yeah, it's there are certainly decks I find easier or harder than others to complete with. The one of the ones that I'm still trying to complete a deck with, a run with, starts with you can have 6 jokers, which is in theory great because that's like 6. That's one extra thing you can modify your scoring with. Mm-hmm. But it starts with like a fairly limited number of like hands you get to play and discards you get to do.
Okay.
So the early game is quite tricky. But if you can get a good run going, you have the potential to really buff it.
A lot of RNG to get that started, but I imagine once it is working, it's pretty good.
Indeed. But yeah, Balatro, that game is fascinating. I'm super intrigued by it. And what about you? What you've been playing this week?
Well, apart from also Balatro, I've been playing some more of the Rusty Lake games, which talked about last week. I was playing the Cube Escape Collection. I've now finished the 9 primary chapters of that, and it's very fucking weird, and there is kind of a through story to it, and I can see like the Twin Peaks analogs have got a little bit more obvious, not just the occasional backwards talking. In fact, they seem to have dropped a lot of that.
Mm.
But the one of the main recurring characters is called Dale. The woman who dies in the first episode is called Laura. But also it is very much its own weird little thing. I'm currently doing Rusty Lake Paradise, I think it's called. And it's a whole thing about your mother's died. You've gone to an island which is currently being beset by, I believe, the plagues of Egypt.
Okay.
So, like, the first one was, like, all the waters turned to blood. The next one was there's frogs everywhere. And then flies.
Mm.
I think I'm just finishing the flies one now. But, having a lot of fun with these weird little point-and-click puzzle-y things, even if sometimes they are a bit frustrating. But luckily there are community guides. Because more often than not, the reason I have failed to do a thing is simply that I couldn't find what I was supposed to be doing next.
Mm.
And it's been nice to just be able to go, I can look up a guide as far as, okay, you need to find this thing, because this is, like, you're surrounded by puzzles that you can see that need to be finished, but and you know roughly what they need.
Yeah.
But finding the one thing you need to do to have triggered that, and sometimes it's just like, you should have clicked here. You clicked away from this, that you solved the puzzle and then clicked away from it too quickly. Is usually the thing that gets me, but I mean, enjoying it in its weird little, very, very much a Newgrounds styly point and click puzzle game, and enjoying more of that. What about you? Have you played anything else?
I can talk about a new thing I've played this week. I played it a while ago, but I can talk about it this week.
Secrets.
I played through Botany Manor, which is a game that I'll give the caveat up front that I've been giving when I talk about this game. Last year, during the Accessibility Summer Showcase, it was one of the games that I picked to be showcased.
Yeah.
And as such, you know, if you want to have some skepticism of my critique, go ahead. But also, I'm not afraid to be critical of this game. I think it does a lot right while I have my little quibbles. We'll talk about the gist of the game first. It is a, I would say, like, maybe 5-ish hour long first-person exploration game where you are playing as a woman who is in, like, the late 1800s. She's inherited this manor house, and her whole thing is botany. She is very, 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 very accomplished and genuinely just very interested in discovering plants and working out what conditions they need to bloom and how to look after weird, bizarre plants people have found around the world.
It just happens that she was born in a time when all of that will not be acknowledged or must be attributed to a man first.
Yes. So it is on the, like, mechanically it is a game about, like, you have this little journal and you have all these little seeds and you unlock little bits of the house at a time, and you're basically looking for clues that you fill into your notebook, and once you've filled in all the slots with all the right clues that apply to the right plant, it'll sort of go, yep, that's all the right clues. Mm. You have the information you need to work out what steps to do to get this plant to bloom. And sometimes it'll be fairly clear, like the very first example is... work out where the plant is from, look it up on a graph, it needs a temperature of this, go change the temperature and put it in front of the warm vent, and it'll bloom.
And sometimes the warm vent isn't enough, so you have to take it to the sauna.
Yeah, it'll sort of ramp up to, like, do you have to go put it in the sort of smoke lodge with a certain kind of wood, where you have to have, like, done something to the seed to get its hard shell to open first,
right.
Or... all sorts of, like, ever more elaborate things where you're, like, referencing newspaper clippings and various things to try and piece together maybe some folklore what you got to do for this plant.
Mm.
But that's all set along the backdrop of this, basically this woman who is doing clearly very good academic research on botany not being taken seriously as an academic.
Mm.
Like, without going too much into it, like, at one point, she gets some of her work published, but under I believe, her uncle's name.
Right.
Because it at least gets the work out there, and, like, she has feelings about that. But it is this beautiful game about, like, understanding and caring for plants viewed through the lens of bigotry and classism within academia in the late 1800s. Mm. Really, really interesting game. Very sweet. There's nothing quite like it. It looks gorgeous. There's a lot of good stuff to say about the accessibility stuff in it. I very much appreciate the fact that it can be played entirely with a single stick.
Nice.
I like that there is a lot of options to do with, like, toggle to hold and all that kind of stuff. And I'm very glad that there is a lot of motion sickness mitigation settings in there. And I think they do a lot to help. There is stuff for increasing things like field of view, for... changing your acceleration speed, and I really appreciate that menu, for anyone who doesn't, like, isn't used to being offered motion sickness settings and doesn't know what's going to help them, it explains with each slider, this is the direction you move it in that's probably going to help.
Mm.
And, like, that's really thoughtful. That said, I did still get a little motion sick with it a couple of times. Not
yes.
Hugely. And there are two factors. One, I played the Switch version, and the Switch version doesn't hold a perfectly stable 30 FPS.
Right.
And the little judders that happen, they're not common. They're usually, if I am, like, moving quickly down some stairs or something, is like, or I've turned the camera a little too fast, it'll judder just enough that it throws my motion sickness a little.
Yeah.
I can confirm that is the issue, because the publisher, Whitethorn Games, did send me a second code so I could check it out on PC.
Mm-hmm.
The issue doesn't exist on PC.
Huh.
So yeah, that is something I would say, it's not a big issue, but be aware if you pick it up on Switch and you are, like me, prone to chronic motion sickness, it's not going to help. Like, if you want to play it second screen, maybe play it on the Steam Deck.
Yeah.
The other thing is, you don't keep the clues you find, like, referenceable in the journal. You have to run, if you want to double check a clue, you've got to go back to where you found it and look at it again.
Right.
And as someone who's chronically motion sick, my options were slowly walk back to the clue or use the sprint function and run back to the clue, even though knowing sprinting is going to make me more likely to feel motion sick.
Or pen and paper notes, I guess.
What I ended up doing on Switch was the screenshot button.
Yeah,
I screenshotted every clue I found so that I could just look at them as an album, because I kept wanting to open the journal and, like, go to a back page and be like, this is where I've, like, stuck all the notes to go look back at.
Yeah, or even, like, if there'd been some option to, like, type in your own bits in on a notes page, at the back.
Most of them are, like, little pieces of paper and, like, things that you could conceivably shove in the back of a notebook.
Like you were scrapbooking or journaling.
Indeed. And that is something I wish was different, but I think, again, if you play on Switch, I wish I'd thought of that sooner. The screenshot button honestly made it a much more, like, it mitigated a lot of the sprinting back and forth that was getting the motion sickness going. But yeah, it's a charming little game. I'm really glad I played it. It's a lovely, wholesome little thing.
It looks very beautiful. Yeah. It's got lovely graphics and lovely and, like, sunny days and bright and colourful.
It's just a very chill little puzzle-solvey, explore-the-house kind of adventure.
Yeah.
What about you? What you been playing this week?
Well, yeah, really the only other thing I would want to talk about is we played a little bit more board games together at the weekend, and I think we should give some credit to Subastral.
Yeah.
Which is a, I guess, set collecting game. You have a, like, six positions that you will be taking cards from or putting cards into.
Mm-hmm.
You are basically attempting to put cards in certain places, and then you can either pick up cards to go in your hand for on one side, or pick up cards to go to be played into your journal. And your journal consists of basically taking the cards you've obtained that you can add to that journal and putting them into piles. And there are eight different types of landscape, from like your tundra to your tropical rainforest to subtropical rainforest, I think, is one of them, and chaparral.
Mm-hmm.
The cards art is beautiful for that. And basically, you have... So your first point of scoring is going to be how many different types of thing you have along in a row.
Yeah.
And then... You will also get to score for, like, the next row of that, but however far it goes along. So if your first row is, I've got one of it, or each of the eight different types of landscape, you're going to get, like, 36 points for that.
Yeah.
But if your second row, you've only got, like, three in the first three slots, and you cannot rearrange these slots, you are only going to get, like, that much bonus for that, and smaller as your numbers go.
Yeah, going from left to right, the first time you miss a gap where it's like, oh, I've got two of the first, two of the second, two of the third, I've only got one of the fourth, even if you've got two of the fifth, no, you can't score any of the ones further along.
No.
So you've got to think hard about, like, which items you get in your set collection first, because those are going to have to be the things you get the most frequently.
Yep. You're also being careful about, like, what you're bringing into your hand to make sure that you've got, like, a good cross-section of numbers so that you can put your pieces into different places on that sort of board, tableau, I guess, that you're taking from. And that there's, like, strategy to that about, like, which ones you pick up when. Is it better to pick up something because it's got a good number on it, or is it better to pick up when there's, say, three cards in a particular space to take from? It's a fascinating little game. You can play through in about 15 minutes.
It's real Moorish. Very Moorish.
I think we played three games of that, and lovely to look at. Scales really well, down to two players. It plays up to five, I believe. And it's fun, quick to teach, easy to learn, and nice small box. We had a bit of a small box session.
We did.
But it was nice to play a bit of Subastral again.
Yeah.
What else have you been playing?
I replayed a game just to get it replayed because the sequel's coming out fairly soonish. I replayed Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice.
Aha, yes.
Which, I forgot how long ago that released, that it was nearly a decade ago that first came out. But yes, Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice is a third-person adventure game that's maybe like 8 hours long, where you play as Senua, who is basically, on the surface, it is a story about a woman trying to go to the god of the god of the underworld to revive her lover who tragically died.
But it's a story told throughout many cultures of I went to go get my partner back from death.
Yes, I'm gonna take something that can bring them back, in this case my lover's head, and go to the Lord of the Underworld and basically be like, can I have my lover back, please? What do I need to do? But it is also a journey of a person battling psychosis, exploring their own trauma, and coming to terms with the experience of living with psychosis at a time in history where that was not terribly well understood.
Yeah.
And where, you know, you could really fall either side of the line of you are the...
A prophet, a shaman, in contact with the gods themselves.
Indeed, or nope, you've gone on the other side, we think you're full of demons now. And mechanically, it is a fairly simple game. A lot of the game is puzzle solving by basically trying to see patterns that maybe don't really exist, but you can line things up to sort of look like they create patterns that match things, sort of blocking doorways. So it's a lot of trying to see things from exactly the right perspective to line things in the environment up to look like other things.
Yeah, it's that sort of superliminal vibes of finding parts of a puzzle and then shifting them around until they make door or
how
bridge.
Do I like get far enough back that the perspectives line up and make it so they all look like one object and that'll do something?
Yeah.
Mixed in with combat, and the combat, I would argue, I think there's maybe more combat in the game than there needs to be, but the combat is very, it is you and your sword, and dodge the incoming swings and get hits in, and you've, you know, there's a little bit of, like, you've got a light attack, a heavy attack, you can charge it, you can do a sort of, like, running slash attack, and the more successful times you dodge incoming enemy attacks, you, like, eventually will start getting abilities like building up a meter you can use to slow down time to get some charges in and things like that. There's not much evolution to the combat. The combat is very much there to be, like, you are fighting your way through a very grueling challenge. It is there to be a progression blocker and to narratively set tone.
God has bouncers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit. The game's been out long enough, I think I can talk about my opinion about, like, one of the design choices of that game, which was a little bit contentious at the time it came out. So, that game sure wants you to believe it has permadeath. There is a bit of dialogue at the start of that game that very heavily implies, if you die too many times, your save's gonna get erased. And that's not a mechanic of this game, and I don't feel, you know, like I'm spoiling too much by saying that, because that put me off playing that game a lot when it first came out.
Yeah.
Particularly given the grueling nature of combat. Like, if the permadeath were real, and I got 2/3 of the way through that game and lost my save, I would not start that game from the beginning.
Fair.
And I say that as someone who thinks that this game is deeply interesting and well worth playing.
Yes.
But
combat could do with a little bit of a tweak.
Yeah, and without going into specifics, I understand narratively what they were going for when they deliberately misled the player there. I think that it's, I don't know if it's ultimately, like, the correct decision to have made. I understand why they're doing it. I think it's worth being open about, like, that is a mislead, and don't be put off playing the game because of that mislead. Other than that, this replay, I didn't play it back through with headphones on, but that is how I would recommend playing the game. It's how I originally played through it. The game does fantastic stuff with positional stereo audio of making all of the whispering voices in her head be coming from everywhere. Very impressive results that they achieve with that, and There is a little something lost when you play it just, like, on a TV and not through headphones. There is definitely something not quite the same on that bit of the experience.
Yeah.
It's
quite an interesting way of doing, like, a hint system with regards to, like, sometimes you'll just hear, like, a whisper of about she's going the wrong way or something like that, which was a really fascinating idea. I think the for myself, and I was just, like, watching you play it while I was doing some painting, I think I would have bounced off it quite quickly, because the combat seemed quite hard, but also is really overwhelming for someone with sensory processing issues.
It is. And I said this at the time, I think it's less overwhelming with headphones on. There is a better separation. But even so, it's a game that I, like, originally played through in a few settings, because it's a lot. It's achieving what it's trying to do really well, but it is a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think on the whole, it does a fairly good job of the way it handles its mental health topics narratively. I think they avoid going too far in the direction of, you know, this mental health condition is either pure evil, or it is a magical superpower that's going to problem solve for you. They walk the line between using it as a helpful way of verbalizing a hint system versus, like, it is going to occasionally deliberately mislead you. I think they do a pretty good job of balancing Senua's relationship to her own mental health and what that means narratively and mechanically. It's an interesting game.
It seems like they got like consultancy in for that stuff so that they could handle it respectfully. And
yeah,
I mean, I don't know what the psychosis community thought about that. But,
my understanding is it was well received. I haven't watched it, but I got linked on Discord today a talk that the creators of the game very recently did, I think, mm. with a charity to do with people who suffer with psychosis, mm. doing a sort of joint talk about representation of psychosis in the series. Cool. So, like, they're clearly making the effort, which yeah. is good. Yeah, I have no real sense of how you make a sequel to that, but within a couple of months, I guess we'll know. What about you? You played anything else this week?
That's pretty much it for me.
The only other thing I really played was I revisited The Binding of Isaac, but on Steam Deck rather than Switch, which is my usual platform.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've been playing around with mods that exist for that game. And I say mods, one mod. I've been playing with the mod that tells you what every item in the game is, like, in the game itself, when you stand next to it, it tells you what it does and what all its abilities are, rather than you having to look up an item you don't know on the wiki.
I need this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like one of my biggest complaints about Binding of Isaac, especially once you've got, like, a few of the expansions.
Yes. Because this is it. I'm playing it with, like, all the expansions, and I know a lot of the things, but there's certain things where I'm just like, my brain will not lock in. That small white circle, is that the one that teleports me back to the start of the room if I take any damage? Or is that the one that's good, actually?
Mm.
Which of these mechanical things that I put on my head is this? Is this the one that gives me the big round Ludovico laser that I want? Or is this the one that turns it into like a piddly little laser and that's not what I want?
Yeah.
It's occasionally I can't tell the difference between a couple of things despite having put hundreds of hours into this series.
Mm.
Just tell me what it is.
Yeah, I mean, there are a staggering number of items, so I think that is very much needed, really. I'm sure it's not for everyone, but I think personally, absolutely a lovely idea, and I'm excited to give it a try myself.
Yeah, it's, you know, I understand the creator's intent and vision for that game, but also I have put enough hours in to go, I understand what your intent and vision was. I would like some convenience, please, for the game I paid for, and I'm going to put that in there.
Little a convenience as a treat.
Little a convenience as a treat.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's everything I've played about. I've played that I can talk about really this week.
Well then,
time for this.
All right, you lot, it's time for the quarterly earnings report, and obviously we need to look ahead at how we're going to be making more money for the next quarter. Obviously, we've been selling a lot of the video games, and that's very good, but there must be some untapped markets, so how can we extract more money from people?
Well, I had some ideas. I thought that maybe, you know, you could look into things like high contrast mode implementation to help make players with low vision able to see the game more easily.
Well, that's a pointless minority, isn't it? We're pandering, that is.
Well, you could also, like, look at, you know, offering button remapping and things like custom difficulty sliders.
Sounds like needless busy work. Oh, what is the point of all this, eh?
It'd be really good, like, for a wide range of disabled gamers if, you know, they could, for example, like, have accessibility presets, for example.
Sounds like woke nonsense.
Well, okay. If you put those things in, more people who right now can't buy the game...
Can't buy it, you say?
No, because they can't play it, because they're disabled.
Right.
Would be able to play it, and would be able to buy it. So right. More people would buy the game.
So more people buy the thing, and then we can exploit them. Excellent, I love it.
I suppose.
Well, okay, who else can we exploit? Got any ideas?
I mean, you could try putting good representation in, and maybe minority groups would buy the game then.
Right. Well, you get down there and start telling the bods in design what
okay,
to do.
Purely for cynical reasons.
Absolutely,
oh,
get us more money.
Definitely not, because it's the right thing
more
to do.
More money.
So, what have you put in your eye? So many things in your eyes.
Should we talk about the thing we watched together this week?
Sure.
We watched a film called Monkey Man.
We did.
At the cinema. This is a Dev Patel who people will know from various things. He was in Slumdog Millionaire. He was Zuko in the M. Night Shyamalan live-action Avatar movie. He's got very good facial hair. Monkey Man is... How do I even describe this film? It is a very intense action film about a man who really feels wronged by the cops. Rightly so. And the sort of elite class of India, and is gonna do an action movie about that. And also, there's a lot of really cool trans representation going on.
Yes.
This was the reason I was made aware of this film is I was told all the trans people in it were played by trans people, and to me, I was like, okay, multiple trans people, and I'm hearing trans people say this film is good. I know nothing else going in. What I was not expecting was, an entire commune of trans people to be a central core humanized part of this film.
Yes.
And not just there as a plot progression point, but as a humanized community.
Yes, because going into this, I'd forgotten that you'd told me that there was good trans representation in this. And then there is a scene where they're watching the news and they're talking about... police clashes with the transgender community,
yeah,
and sort of blurry footage in the background of some people getting beaten by cops. Mm. And I was like, oh god, this is going to be this is going to be some trans misery porn.
That moment in hindsight was actually a really good sign, because even the one moment where abuse and harassment of the trans community was acknowledged directly, they didn't show it in focus. They didn't linger on...
all the things they show in brutal, gory detail.
Yeah, we don't need to show you directly, trans people suffering at the hands of police. Mm. You get that that's a thing. The film basically goes, hey, individual man who has a grudge against the police, what if you recognize that you had solidarity with the trans community, they also have issues with their mistreatment by the hands of police, and that maybe... you have a sort of shared struggle here you could find community in and support each other in.
This film taught me ACAB, and if you're in trouble, you're better off going and seeking a trans commune than you are going to anyone in authority about it.
That trans commune will keep you safe, keep you hidden, and teach you how to fucking kick ass to some cool drumming.
That is an amazing, montage scene of training. It was really good, very heartwarming, very uplifting, and very thoughtful. But I don't know if it was that film particularly, or if as I have got older and more full of estrogen, I have a higher, more struggle with watching that much gore in a film, because this film is brutal. There's heads bouncing off sinks and toilet bowls and things.
It was a lot. Certainly don't go into this unless you are ready for quite an intense action film.
Yes.
But again, it was all very much there for a purpose. It was all well set up and justified. And again, I keep going between cool anti-authority action film and wasn't it just nice to see a bunch of trans people just being happy and being together and being allowed to be just people who weren't made a big deal of? And that film did two things at once, and it somehow did them both.
Yeah, I think it did them very well.
Yeah, it's a fascinating film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. What about you? What you watched this week?
I read a book.
Ooh, what's the book? I know what book it was.
Comet in Moomin Land.
It's a Moomin book.
It was a Moomin book. I think between playing Snufkin Melody of Moomin Valley and listening to other people talking about that, I was watching Geekenders and Dodger was talking about reading Clark Moomin books. I'd be like, these are fucking wild. I need to find more of these. And apparently... between them, they are going to try and find all of the Moon books to find out the full history and slowly read it to their kid.
Yeah.
So this story basically opens with Sniff and Moon Troll finding a cool cave and going on a fun adventure day out and being like, oh, I found some cool stuff. And then the following day just going, there's portents of something terrifying happening. Moomin Troll went pearl diving on the first day, and they put all the pearls in the cave they found, just on the floor, neatly. And the next day they go back, and it's all arranged into the shape of a, like a star with a tail.
Aww.
And then there's, like, fields where all the flowers are in the shape of a star with a tail, and there's the waves, the seagulls sitting on the crests of the wave bobbing around are all arrayed in the shape of a star with a tail. So they go and see the muskrat, and the muskrat's like, oh, well, you know, I'm just a philosopher, and, you know, nothing really matters. It's all very unnecessary and such, but, you know, it's probably a portent of doom. Not that it matters, of course. Because,
you know, casual portents of doom,
a very nihilistic muskrat, to be honest. This is the one that you're cooking food for in the Melody Moomin Valley.
Oh, yeah.
And they basically go home and be like, Moomin Mama, yeah, we're going to go on an adventure to try and find someone who can tell us about the comet. And they go to an observatory that's far, far away and basically go on a mission down the rafting down the river. Moomin Mama packs them some sandwiches and some warm trousers and sends them off on a mission. Which is very cool that you can live in a world where it's just like, yeah, it's fine. Oh, yeah, off you go, kids. You go on a mission. We'll see you at some point. Bye. And they eventually bump into Snufkin, who I think has become just my favourite character.
Snufkin is perfect. Snufkin's
great.
Wonderful.
It's like, I don't really have any possessions. Not a big fan of possessions. They just tie me down. I just have more to carry.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just wander around a lot, and everywhere is my home and nowhere is my home. And that's, you know, cool. And I go and enjoy things, and I play my music, and I meet people, and I have a bunch of cool stories.
That sounds like a lovely life, doesn't it?
Right. Just go be a bit nomadic and not really tied to anything, but, you know, and not a huge number of responsibilities, but just having a bunch of really cool stories. So, you know, ends up tagging along with Sniff and Moomin Troll as they go on this mission, telling various stories and meeting the Snork Maiden and Snork. And yeah, it's just a fascinating adventure about, there is a potentially world-destroying comet on the way that's getting bigger and bigger by the day. And trying to find out what that's all about, and then trying to get home again in the hope that Mum will know what to do. The comet is coming. It's going to hit us at this precise date and time, plus or minus 4 seconds, but Mum will know what to do, so we'll go home again.
It'll be all right.
And, it's a fascinating little adventure, and I had a good time. And that's the first time I've read a Moomin book. Like, I watched the cartoon series. Not the cute, adorable anime one. The terrifying Finnish one, I think it is, or German one, from the 1980s, when I was a kid, that was on. And, it was a good time, and I look forward to reading more Moomin books, because I've got some others as well. But, what about you? What have you looked at? You watched some films, didn't you?
I've watched a couple of films. See, you know, I have the ability to just pop to the cinema, so I sometimes do that.
Yeah.
I can talk about this one very quickly. I went and saw a film that I have not seen the previous three installments of, but that really didn't matter. I went and saw Kung Fu Panda 4.
Yes.
I knew the vague premise. There's a panda, he becomes a martial artist. That's about the gist of what I knew. Didn't really need to know much more. This fourth one is like, hey, you've been the big famous martial artist for like three films. Your previous master sort of left the duty to you to, like, you know, it's your time to go become the spiritual leader and pass the being the martial artist down to someone new to, you know, pass it on. And our panda friend is like, I'm not ready for that. I feel like I finally have a purpose in doing the kung fu stuff. And also it helps that, like, you know, I'm famous and well-liked for doing it. But also, I'm not so good at the thinking, and I'm a bit terrified of the prospect of having to provide spiritual wisdom to people. I'm just going to go on one more adventure. And that one more adventure is, there is a chameleon that can transform into the shapes of other people and is stealing the forms and kung fu of all the villains from the past films.
It's Shang Tsung.
Basically.
From the original Mortal Kombat.
I got to get the gist of all the villains from the past films because she at some point sort of becomes them, basically.
I recognised the tiger in the trailer.
Yeah, I recognised the tiger too. I was like, I think you're from the first one, maybe?
I watched the first one. I don't remember it. Apart from Jack Black says skadoosh a lot.
He does say skadoosh a lot. Here's my takeaway. It was a fun, light-hearted sort of buddy cop adventure movie. The plot twists were like the plot direction was very predictable, but there were some enjoyable fight scenes and some amusing humor and some good pacing to it. It was a fun time that I had no context for and enjoyed myself in. I watched another thing, and that thing is a lot. I watched Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. How do I even begin to explain this one? Late Night with the Devil is, the film is contextualized as being, a documentary about a talk show that was airing in the late 70s. And, you know, the ratings had been up and down and up and down for a while, and this talk show was risking being cancelled. So on Halloween night one year, the talk show host basically tries to go all out on this big Halloween spectacular. And the following 90 minutes is the footage that aired live on TV that night.
Plus what happened between the breaks.
Yeah, so anytime the ad breaks were happening, the cameras were still rolling, and, like, behind-the-scenes footage from, like, you know, the getting stuff set up between takes and the stuff that happened off-screen during the ad breaks.
Yeah.
Of this live taping of a talk show that over 90 minutes goes from very hokey psychic through to have we literally accidentally summoned a demon into the set and everything's going terrible.
Oopsie.
And maybe there's some backstory to the talk show host of, like, maybe he was playing around with some stuff he shouldn't have done. But it is, they do a really good job with the premise of, like, this 90 minutes is the 90 minutes in which everything happens.
It kind of reminds me of, like, BBC Ghostwatch.
I was thinking of BBC Ghostwatch very routinely throughout it. Mm. Because specifically, like, a lot of the film's pacing is, you know how Ghostwatch had, like, the skeptic point of view that, like, became harder to hold the longer it went on.
Yes.
One of the guests on the talk show is a skeptic trying to debunk the mystical stuff seeming to be going on.
Yeah.
And you've got that whole, like, more and more people on the set are concerned that, like, this isn't a goof, you're fucking with stuff you really shouldn't be able to. Like, there's crew member walkouts being threatened. And the skeptic's like, no, I'm convinced I know what's going on. Okay, I can't explain that one. But I'm sure. Okay.
Hmm.
It's a little bit. What if BBC Ghostwatch was the lead up to what's it? The movie Nope, that the whole inciting incident is the Gordo's house, the sitcom where the monkey like things go poorly on the set of that show. It feels like what if you were watching the 90 minutes up to the disaster on the TV show set that was. It's a fascinating film. It goes some places, particularly its last, like, 10-15 minutes is fucking wild. It is an impressive piece of filmmaking. It is well worth seeing. I'm half like, I could go see that again. I could go see it again. It was a good one.
Excellent, why not?
What about you? You put anything else in your eyes this week?
That's pretty much it for me.
That's about it for me as well.
Well,
time for this.
Hey, Laura.
Yes?
We've got a new sponsor.
Who's our new sponsor?
Well, do you sometimes get those little notifications that a delivery had been attempted? And then you're like, well, it's not here. And there's also no card through my door to say that they had missed me or whatever.
Oh, I get those all the time. I had one of those recently where they even did, like, oh, here's a photo. We put it through your door. That was not my door. That was not my door at all. How dare they?
And in fact, did it in fact have the completely different house number?
It had
the
number that wasn't the number of my house on the front of the door.
Which surely would have given it away, you'd have thought.
You would have thought that would give it away. It's fairly good evidence that they failed their end of the bargain.
Well, then this week's sponsor is for you. This week's sponsor is ilivehere.lol.net.
Oh, tell me more.
It's all caps. It's a series of bright neon signs that the post people or delivery people cannot fucking miss.
Oh, I'm looking at the sample images now. That's just a huge glowing arrow that has, like, the house number in huge letters and just arrows pointing from all sides to someone's literally right at the front door.
Yeah, and it even has, like, little, like, if you look down the little side bit there,
you can
see where, in this example, you have to get around the back of a building in order to find that person's house.
Like, halfway up the street, there's a little, like, you know, essentially a red carpet of sorts going this way, this is where that house is.
Check out this one. This one is in a tower block, and it shows you on the outside of the building what floor you need to go to.
Ooh.
It's all written on the outside. That's really cool. That's all brightly lit up. So if you need a series of bright light up signs so that the post person or delivery person doesn't get your house mixed up with the bloody neighbours again, check out ilivehere.lol.net. Enter the all caps and enter the code QMPS301.
Oh.
And you can get this installed over most of your neighbourhood.
Bet they're still gonna deliver it to the wrong door.
I can't wait to see the photographs, though.
Yeah.
Inside the boardroom of Supremacy Software.
Hi.
So, I've got a new plan.
Excellent.
I got a new scheme. I got a new way.
Money.
I think we can get some, you know, more work out of and less money out of having employees.
Excellent.
So, I've been thinking about the QA testers, the play testers, the ones that they gotta play the game to do their job to, like, check for bugs and stuff.
Yeah.
So, right now, they're employees, technically, and there's various things we legally are supposed to have to do.
Right.
And I'm thinking, what can we do to, you know, circumvent that?
Right, I mean, I thought we had mostly managed to replace all of the QA team with interns.
I mean, we've been trying our best, but occasionally, you know, someone slips through the cracks and, you know, someone's got to double-check the work of the people who don't give a shit.
God damn it.
So, here's what I've been working on.
Right.
We know they're going to have to play the game to do their job.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
They literally can't do the job without playing the game.
Right.
And nobody reads EULAs. At the start of games. Like, you know, you might read your employment contract, but you won't read the thing at the start of a game,
will you? I
mean,
we deliberately made it super long and super legalese.
Exactly.
So that, you know, we could slip whatever we wanted in there.
So what I'm saying is, if we put something in the EULA that says, hey, this doesn't apply to most of you playing the game, but if you're playing the game and you're a play tester, you're a QA tester, this modifies your employment contract. And we just sneak a bunch of little changes to their employment lore into the EULA.
That is beautiful.
Right? I was bloody proud of it.
You absolutely should be. You are a fucking genius.
I know.
So, what have you put in your ears?
It's been this way for a while now. It's not been a big put new stuff in my ears week.
No.
I've been continuing to chip away at Welcome to Night Vale. I'm like 100 episodes into that, slowly plodding away on it. I'm continuing to enjoy that surreal radio show in my weird liminal space once a week. Really, I've not put much new in my ears. It's been lots and lots of big work projects that have not given me music space in my brain. What about you, though? Have you been listening to stuff?
Me, it's been a bit of a catch-up. Like, I've listened to, like, the most recent episodes of Podquisition, because apparently I'd fallen quite far behind on that. And the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast, because that's been weirdly difficult to follow recently. And I listened to an album that I was recommended on TikTok. I was like, you know what, I'll give that a try. I enjoy electro swing. I'm up for an entire album of electro swing. That's a concept album. This could be fascinating. And I listened to it, and it wasn't very good, and some of the content of some of the tracks was problematic in a way that I am not willing to give it any advertising on this show.
Ouch.
So, yeah, that was... It wasn't even very good electro swing.
it's unfortunately how stuff goes when you try a bunch of new things. Is sometimes you're just like, I listened to some things. They were bad. They were bad in a way where I don't want to highlight them.
Exactly. Like occasionally I'll be like, I would listen to a thing. It wasn't very good, and just leave it at that. And I'll tell you what it was. But this time it's like it was bad, and it does not deserve any credit. So
yeah, there's a difference between like bad, but like in an interesting way. Bad, like. It's the worst when it's like, oh, it was uninteresting and I had problems with it. That's the combo where it's like, yeah, no thanks.
Yeah. There is, the Magnus Protocol has restarted again as of today, so we'll maybe tell you about that next week.
Ooh, I'm excited.
Well, for now, that's I guess that's everything.
Well then, time for this.
Are your eyes burning after staring at the solar eclipse?
I can smell my corneas.
Are you mad there was no sign or warning telling you looking at the sun without eyeglass protection was a bad idea?
There should have been something written on the sky.
Are you upset that the sun didn't give you ample warning that it was still dangerous even in a moment of beauty?
I was betrayed by the sun.
Join our class action lawsuit against the very sun itself. We cannot let this big ball of burning gas get away with such lax practices.
Yay! Victory over the sun!
So it's lovely to get to hang out. It's been great. Yeah, I mean, how are things going? We're struggling with your GP a bit.
I know. They've just been, you know, roadblocks as ever. You know, getting trying to send me back to the gender service for any little thing, regardless whether it's actually gender. You know,
your broken arm situation.
Oh, trans broken arm. Yeah. Love getting that whole thing.
Love it. So, had to laugh. I saw this morning. Apparently, they think that trans people are replacing God.
Oh, who's they? Who's gotten that idea in their heads?
Well, apparently this was on Fox News.
Oh, yeah.
The bigots barking as always. And they imagine we have the power, but I guess the real question is, who told them?
I mean, that is important. Who did tell them?
We're going to
have to silence them.
The other thing is, are they just being hyperbolic, or do we have a problem? Is there, you know...
Yeah, like, are they just fear-mongering, or do they actually know?
Because we're going to. Any day now.
So funny.
Do you know what I want to see more of?
What do you want to see more of?
Brochure Justice Warriors.
Brochure Justice Warriors?
Yeah.
All right, Larry. All right, Barry. How you doing?
Oh, you know, not so bad, mate. Not so bad. You doing all right?
Oh, I'm frustrated today.
Yeah,
frustrated. So, the UK's been doing bullshit to trans people again.
What? I am so surprised.
I know.
What atrocities have they unveiled today?
So this time, we finally found out the findings of something called the Cass Report.
Right.
It's been going on for bloody years, which is a sort of... it was penned as a sort of review into the effectiveness of various kinds of trans healthcare.
Right.
And here's the fucking result that's come out of it. Of 103 studies into trans healthcare that have already existed and happened, that overwhelmingly say, like, hey, you know, hormones and blockers and surgery are overwhelmingly very positive, you know, medical interventions to do. The Cass Review threw out 101 of those 103 studies.
Right, so just the ones by the Heritage Foundation or whatever,
basically,
of a bigoted group left over then, yeah.
And I am so... fucking frustrated over why they threw out all of the studies and decided that they were not credible studies that say, you know, trans people getting healthcare makes them happier and is good.
Right.
The reasoning, and this is the reasoning for most of the ones they threw out, was there were no double-blind studies. And this is for things like hormones and genital surgery. As examples. How the fucking hell do you expect to do a double-blind study on surgery?
We taped a shiwi to a trans man, and now double-blind, whee!
Yeah, because, like, how the fuck are you going to double-blind that study? People are going to know pretty fucking quick whether you rearrange their junk or not.
Hang on, I went in for surgery. Something's not right here.
You know, how do you do a double-blind study on the effectiveness of HRT without someone going,
I've been on hormones for a while, and I have a distinct lack of tits.
I think I need to have my dosage updated.
I've been on testosterone for a while, and I have suspiciously little facial hair happening. You know, these are not really medications that you can double-blind a study very effectively, no. Because it's going to be pretty fucking clear pretty quickly to all involved whether you gave them the placebo or the active medication.
Yeah.
It is a fucking ridiculous standard to hold, and it's very clear that it is not a reasonable standard. It is not a standard that there are lots of medications and surgeries and things that we do not double blind because there is no ethical way to double blind them.
Yeah, you can't exactly. Well, my nan went in for a hip replacement, and is she part of the
exactly?
You can't test group.
You can't cut her open so that she thinks she got a new hip, but she didn't get a new hip just to see whether she feels better. That is wildly unethical. It is so transparently an excuse to disregard the overwhelming body of evidence that, you know, supports affirmative, supportive care for trans people.
Which is seemingly really all they want.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, this is not a surprise, but it should be a fucking, like, if you are listening to this and this is the first you're hearing of it, you know, if anyone stumbles upon this information, this is the sort of thing they should be fucking shouting from the rooftops on. This should be like the biggest fucking scandal in this kind of thing in a long time.
It's
fucking unbelievable.
Yeah, but also horrifyingly believable because it's the Tories and we know exactly what they're like. You know, it's us and the migrants right now who are, you know, the real problem with this country.
Thanks,
young mate.
Oh, yeah.
Good luck, mate.
Good luck.
Right, then go and have a little lie down.
Oh, sounds lovely.
Nice.
So, you do things, people like those things, people can find those things. Where on the internet can people find
your things?
People can find stuff I do at Laura K. Buzz pretty much everywhere on the internet. Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, TikTok, Patreon, that's the one that pays the bills. As little as $1 a month over there really helps keep doing all this stuff. Blue Sky, Mastodon, all the places you can find me. You can check out my accessibility review of Botany Manor over on YouTube or on access-ability.uk. You can also go check out, there is a 35-minute conversation between myself and content creator Arevia talking about the PlayStation Access controller a few months, you know, post it being released, so you go check that out. Dice Funk, I'll remind people that exists. It's a Dungeons & Dragons podcast, each season's a self-contained story. We're currently on season 11, where it's split into two halves, and it's about a resurrection portal that exists underwater and the people above ground doing sort of vibe checks on who gets to have themselves resurrected in these weird little pools. The current arc is me getting to establish the Riddlefish religion. I am a paladin of the Riddlefish, and the current arc is all about me going on a religious pilgrimage and doing lots of puns and lots of riddles and lots of coming up with what is my equivalent of the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost, but for Riddlefish.
Excellent.
It's fun to make up lore for a religion that doesn't exist.
Excellent.
It's one of my favourite Dice Funk arcs that's happened in a while. I'm so happy with it. Please check Dice Funk out. What about you? Where are you at on the internet?
Well, I have a link tree, linktr.ee/janiac, J-A-N-E-I-A-C. You can find all the things I've written, music I've made, t-shirts I've designed, anything else that happens to come along in the moment. You can get all of that stuff. And also, you can help support me at patreon.com/stonedmonkeyradio. For as little as $1 a month, you can help justify all of the work. All of the work. But that's it for me. Laura?
Yeah?
Will you sing us out, please, darling?
Until next time, be a stranger.